You're listening to What She Said, a podcast all about blogging, creativity and life online, hosted by me, Lucy Lucraft, freelance journalist and blogger based in Brighton. Each week, I chat to guests about their blogging journey and find out how they got to where they are today, the struggles, the wins, and we share lots of helpful tips and tricks too. So hopefully you'll forgive me for this mega plug of my brand new SEO course, which launched. It was supposed to launch on the 1st of September, but actually I opened enrolment a little bit early and let my Facebook group and my newsletter by a little bit early. Anyway, if you haven't heard about my SEO course, it's pretty magical. It's called Simple SEO Success. I pulled all of my knowledge into it as someone who's taught themselves SEO and then gone on to help consult and help other people with their SEO for their websites. I created the course because when I started out, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I taught myself everything I know, and I got really frustrated with how much nonsense and noise there was out there. And when I learned the actual facts of it all, I realised that there's just a huge heap of BS. So I created the course for the me of 5 years ago in order to help people on their way to SEO success. So things that we're going to cover, I'm going to talk about Keyword Planner and teach you how to use it. There'll be basic SEO right through to some more advanced tricks, and I want to give you the tools to help you increase your blog traffic and website authority if that's the sort of thing that you want to do. Basically, I'm going to help you remove your blog's invisibility cloak. And because I'm me, there's no BS and there's nothing technical about it all. So the course is £120 for one-off payment. You get that information for life. You can dip in and out for years to come. Or there's a payment plan if you want to spread the payments. So there's a couple of options there for you. You could buy the course in the link in the show notes, or you can go to lucy-lucraft@teachable.com. If you have any questions at all, let me know. You have a few weeks to get it, but I would suggest getting it now because I am capping the student count. So now that bit's over, I am going to introduce you to the very first guest of season three of What She Said. It's Simon Hayes, who's a good friend of mine and a travel blogger. The reason that I wanted to chat to him was because he's a total SEO whiz. He runs a digital marketing agency. He's just a really nice guy. He's super funny. He's one of my favourite humans, and he knows loads about SEO. I think we answered quite a few of your questions that I'd put out there on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram beforehand. I hope that we've covered all your questions, and I really, really hope that we didn't go too kind of techie or geeky, because, you know, I'm not that. I'm not massively techie or geeky, and I know it'll be super helpful. There's loads of really actionable tips and tricks. There's one in there that I didn't know about. It's brilliant. It's really interesting. And also I added in a very funny blooper. So if you listen right to the end, or you can just skip right to the very end, the last 30 seconds or so, there's a little blooper in there for you. I found it very funny. Hopefully you will too. Enjoy the episode.
Fall silent, for I shall start.
I shall.
Hi, Simon. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lucy. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I had a great summer, so yes. And it's finally rained. Woo!
Are you happy about that? Have you got plants?
I do have plants. I was growing some potatoes.
Are you? I'm growing courgette.
Oh, nice. Mm. Nice. I do like courgette.
Mm. As do I. But yes. That's off topic. First of all, I just want to say this is the second episode of What She Said featuring a man. And I hope that everyone is not too cross about that. So that's fun, what he said. You can say something if you want.
No, I quite like the intro. No, carry on.
So for anyone that doesn't know who you are, do you want to give us a brief journey that you've gone on with your blog and how it's led you to where you are today?
Sure, yeah. So I guess my name's Simon Hayes, and I started up my blog back in 2006. So this is like a long time ago. And the blog then, up to about a month ago, was called Simon's Jam Jar. And there was no real logic behind the name. I was just sort of sat in a lounge and I was looking over at my, where I was in the kitchen and saw a little jam jar sat on the side. And I was like, well, it's mine and I don't really know what to, this is like New Year's Day in 2006. So I was a little bit hungover as well. So the creative juices weren't really flowing. And I called it that. And the idea was that I would just create little snippets of stories or bits and pieces of content that I could put into the blog and be small enough to fit in a jam jar. And that was that. And away I went. And I guess I was never really a travel blogger at that point. So I am an SEO geek at heart, which is of course what we'll come into later on this podcast. So I just used it as an SEO testbed, really, just to see what I could make rank on Google. And that was anything from watching TV programs and adverts to anything that happened in the digital marketing world. So it was never really a blog that I shared. It was just something that I loaded content onto and just sort of saw what happened on Google. And then probably late 2011, early 2012, I had a chat with a few people. And by this point, I was planning to do a bit of a round the world trip for 6 months and quit my job. And they said, why don't you use the blog to tell stories when you're traveling? So I thought, yeah, that's a great idea. So I gave it a completely lick of paint. I completely altered the way I write. So this was like 90% focused on SEO predominantly and less about me and, you know, the stories that I wanted to tell and my sort of, just approach to writing, I suppose. So I completely flipped it around. And when I went traveling, I used it as the platform to share content and stories with family and friends. So that was Simon's Jam Jar. And then when I came back from traveling mid-2013, I missed traveling so much. And so for any travel bloggers out there, they'll know exactly what I mean by that. And I fell into the travel blogging world in London. And it was actually nice to just sort of bounce around stories about travel, what they're doing with a blog. And it really gave me a resurgence of what I should do in terms of where I should take it and the stories I should tell and so forth. So that was the journey. And then up until a month ago, it was still Simon's Jam Jar, but I kind of outgrown it. So that was like, what was that, 12 years of the Jam Jar, which was great. And it did me proud and it was brilliant, but it just wasn't really me anymore. I think I outgrew it. So my new blog is called Adventure Bagging, which is all to do with adventures, new experiences, hiking, camping, just new skills, everything under that umbrella, essentially. And the bagging part is a little nod to my northern roots. So I'm from Lancashire originally, although I definitely don't sound it. And bagging is all to do with food and eating and things like that. So adventure bagging, adventure, outdoors, food. That's exactly what the blog is. So yes, that's my blog. Please check it out. Thank you.
Bye-bye. So adventure bagging, the stuff that you're writing about on there is basically what you were writing about on Simon's Jam Jar anyway, wasn't it? It was like most recently. Because when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, but it's exactly the same. Like it doesn't feel, in a nice way, it doesn't feel, no pun intended, jarring that...
That was bad.
Things have changed. Yeah, well, I tried. That everything's changed. It doesn't feel like, oh my God, who is this new person? Natural.
No, I tried to keep the voice exactly the same. I think it's just the type of posts that I'll create are going to be a bit more like weekend adventures or hiking adventures. Or I've got a little Springer Spaniel now that's a year old. So it's like dog-friendly beaches or dog-friendly accommodation, things like that, really, that are a bit more... that shifted from where it was. So previously it was like, you know, a week's itinerary in Sri Lanka or where to visit in Zimbabwe. Yeah. That sort of thing is going to be a bit less, I think.
Yeah. And maybe family travel too.
Well, this is it. Family travel from September onwards.
Yeah.
Watch this space.
So when this comes out, this will come out first week of September.
Be close. Due date's the 11th.
Well, maybe I will time it with that.
Do it.
Right, let's talk about SEO, shall we?
Yes.
So when did I meet you? 2013, 2014, probably.
Yeah.
And I knew you as a travel blogger. I didn't know you as an SEO geek or anything, although I'm sure we talked about it. Would we have? We'd probably be too drunk.
Yeah.
And then the talks that you did at Traverse that I saw were around affiliate marketing, but you talked a lot about SEO and stuff like that then as well, because your bread and butter, I guess you could say, your full-time job was in a digital marketing agency.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us a bit about that, about your credentials to talk on this?
Yeah. So I entered the digital marketing world 2 years before I started my blog. So now, bearing in mind, I'm 36 now. I'm a bit older than probably your average audience.
No, not at all.
Definitely. Okay, yeah, good. That makes it a lot better. Cheers. The grey hairs are coming through, so you can't tell them. So I started working for a digital marketing agency, back in 2004, who specialized in SEO, really. And at that point, they were one of the best at what they did in the UK. And it was only a small company at that time. It was probably about 10 people. And because I was fresh, I was new, I was getting to learn. It was essentially, I was just like a sponge. I soaked up everything that the guys who were working on campaigns for, you know, British Airways and MTV, people like that, were talking about day in, day out. And I absolutely loved it. I thought it was brilliant. And for any website to, you know, smash the rankings, get to the top of Google and mop up all the traffic and watch them grow was absolutely staggering. So it was brilliant. It was a great learning curve. Now, obviously, fast forward through time, there's been so many, you know, updates to Google's algorithm and the way that people search and the devices they search on and so on and so forth. So it's always changing. It's one of those industries that really keeps you on your toes. So even if you think you're set with SEO in 2018, 2019 might be completely different. So from that point of view, it's brilliant. So I guess what I tried to do with blogging, as I mentioned earlier, was just to use that to see what would happen if I tried different things or certain techniques or strategies that I could then roll out to clients, I guess. So that's the background. So I guess I've got 14 years of SEO knowledge. My word.
Quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
So let's talk about SEO because obviously from your point of view, you are dealing with businesses who need your SEO consulting knowledge. But for the purpose of this podcast, taking it right back to basics, it's trying to simplify SEO for bloggers. I feel like I'm a massive geek as well. I always have been. So that's why I always loved learning about SEO as a blogger. And I found personally that there was just a huge pile of misinformation out there. There was lots and lots of people saying, this is what you should do. This is the only way that you can achieve, et cetera, et cetera. And when I looked at it and started looking outside of just bloggers' advice, but, you know, SEO experts' advice, I realized that was just bullshit. And some of the questions, we've got some questions already, but before we go into them, I'd love to hear from you. What do you think the number one mistake that bloggers make with SEO is?
Good question. Number one mistake is possibly giving away links too easy. Ooh. So I guess, yeah, I mean, it's, well, let's distill it down. I think the way that you approach SEO, whether you're a brand, a business, or a blogger, occasionally, you know, you're all three of those things. But SEO can be broken down into three parts. Let's simplify it. Part one is the technical background of your website, the hosting, your accessibility, all that sort of thing. The middle bit is content, what you write, how you write it, how that integrates keywords and so on and so forth. And then the third part is links. Now, there's been a bit of an uproar in the digital industry for the last few years because Google has gone out and said, actually, if you are a blogger and you are getting paid for a collaboration with a brand, you shouldn't give a follow link because essentially it's advertising, blah, blah, blah. We might penalize you and everything else. But it's interesting from my point of view because I see both sides of the fence. I see it from a blogger point of view and I see it from an SEO point of view. And so from the blogger side, you read forums and group chat all the time as saying, actually, you know, we're running this campaign. The brand we're working with are looking for, blogs that have a domain authority of over 30. If that's you, get in touch, and blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, no, why is this the metric I was still using?
What, and DA? Of course,
Yeah. And I just don't think you should base a collaboration on your domain authority of your blog. That's not the aim, because the aim for the brand behind them is simply to get good links, and bloggers then give it away, and then that then affects the credibility of your blog. So yeah, that's probably the biggest mistake I think people would make.
So okay, so to simplify that even more, mm. what you're saying is that in giving away a link to a brand for a collaboration, what you're doing is telling Google that this you are associating yourself with some crappy website, for example.
it depends on who you're collaborating with. I guess.
Okay, say it's for the.
Let me give you. I'll give you a good example.
Yeah.
A good example is if you are approached by an insurance company, for instance, mm-hmm. and yes, it might be travel insurance or whatever else, but they may ask for follow links to car insurance or what have you. You know, insurance sector's incredibly competitive, and in which case, even if you disclose it, Google's going to know that, you know, that's a paid for link, and they've not come out and actually penalized anyone before for doing this. It's just in the guidelines that they may knock you down if you do it and it's paid and whatever else. So it's, yes, it has to be related, and not all brands are bad, but, yeah, it can have a negative effect on your blog.
And that's probably a piece of the puzzle that people don't necessarily think of when they think of SEO. And what I was going to say is the biggest mistake that people make is thinking that writing good, or in quotation marks, good SEO posts are top 10 posts. Because you can still... I still hear that. I was listening to a podcast episode the other day where people still say... Oh, you know, I really like storytelling. I still want to write good SEO posts, but I just really, really like storytelling too. And it makes me really mad because the two aren't mutually exclusive.
No.
So some of my best posts, my best ranking posts, aren't listicles. And that's not to say that you shouldn't write listicles, but don't think that you're... If you write a really beautiful storytelling-y post, that you know, somebody won't be searching for it. It's not like Google hides all storytelling posts and then only shows things that are easily digestible in 2 minutes.
Correct. It's a balance. I mean, there's many bloggers out there who would say that, you know, they've developed a following over so many years because of the way their voice comes across in their blog, not because of, you know, the traffic they've generated through Google, and then, oh, people have suddenly come across the blog and started following it. It doesn't necessarily work like that. So, and a lot of bloggers I know hate listicles. You know, they feel like the whole blogosphere has gone that way purely to suit Google, which is a bad thing, I think.
Yeah, and I think that is true as well. I do think that, especially, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say especially, but I feel like in travel blogging that is a bit true. But I also think there's a lot of snobbery around listicles. I quite like reading them sometimes.
Yeah, and they're quite handy. You know, if you're there, let's say you're going to visit a city and you want to know the top 10 restaurants or top 10 bars, and okay, TripAdvisor aside, it might be just a simple, easy, digestible blog post that helps you, you know, find those things. So yeah, they have the benefits of it, I guess.
And good for affiliate links as well.
Of course.
Yeah.
Especially if it's product based list.
Yeah. So that's something that I'm trying to focus on a little bit anyway. If you were starting a blog tomorrow, so for people who have started a blog in the past year, for example, I mean, there's been an algorithm change, I think, in the past week, or the past few weeks, they announced a last week, maybe they announced an algorithm change. Have I made that up?
No, there possibly has been. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's always like one or two every few weeks. Some are big, some are not.
Every few weeks. That's wild. That is wild. Anyhow, so, for somebody starting out right now, what are the best things to put in place to make sure that your blog has kind of cornerstone SEO beautiful stuff that Google will love?
Make it quick, as in make the pages quick to load. So the biggest issue we've seen with blogs, especially travel blogs, is they're obviously very image heavy, and a lot of that means that the page is heavily bloated and doesn't load as quickly as it should do. Now, there's loads of, if you're starting out and you use Blogger, then there's ways and means that they sort of, if you load an image that's, say, you know, 3,000 pixels by 1,500 pixels straight from your camera, Blogger actually distills it down and crops it into various different sizes depending on what the template of your blog looks like. So that's a simple way of doing it for that. Yeah, and there's several different plugins on WordPress for you to compress them down, so that works. But there's also with WordPress, there's a lot of other bloat because of all the plugins that then come in. So for example, the contact form, if you use contact form 7 as a plugin and various other plugins that then sort of sit on top of that, there's extra CSS, there's extra JavaScript, which then adds a bit more bloat, which typically you can't control. You can just sort of move it around the template so it loads later on and it's deferred and things. I'm getting a bit technical here, so
if I go too technical,
bring me back up, because that can happen.
So what you're saying is basically in WordPress, because you have like little shortcuts that are hacks, so that you don't have to access the back end of your website and write lines into code. You've got a plugin that does it for you. But what that means is that it's just another little shortcut that actually when the spider is crawling your website, it's getting lots of, it's almost like the way I think about it is that there's a little person, every plugin is a little person, be like, hey, no, come this way, move this way now, don't go that way. And then it just gets lost. That's how I think about it.
Interesting analogy. How about this one? So let's say you're a little spidery robot and you've got to climb a ladder to get to all the content that you need, and all the plugins just put another rung in the ladder.
That's a better analogy. Is it? Like, no, I prefer mine actually, but they're both kind of saying the same thing, aren't they?
They are, yeah. So yeah, just be careful. So there's a couple of tools actually that I use pretty much every day. There's Google Page Speed Insights, which you can have a look at. So basically Google that, you can throw in a particular URL from your blog and it will spit out the improvements you can make to help the blog faster, and a few other hints and tips as well.
Just a note of caution on this, it's really, really helpful, but when it gives you the helpful hints and tips, they are in Google language, so some of them aren't very they won't literally come back and be like, hey you, so that there's a, you just need to resize this image, it'll be like AMP this, and just use it with caution, but it will tell you if your site is really, really slow, and it will tell you to just get off the internet or not.
So you should get off the internet. Gosh.
I think my site was really, really slow, and I had a lot of red flags, which was quite scary, but it's fine. The other thing that I think people will really want to know about, and you touched on it a little bit earlier, and I'm glad that you said that it's pointless, is domain authority. Well, not pointless, but it's a really silly metric to focus on.
It's a silly metric to focus on if you're a brand and you're running a campaign and that's what you're choosing bloggers on the basis of. Because the audiences that the brand's trying to tap into should be aligned to your audience. It shouldn't be based on a simple domain metric, because domain metrics based on the number of links you get from other sites, and that's what they want to tap into. And there's a disconnect. For me, it's just not natural. But from, you know, wearing your SEO hat, if you're a blogger, it's quite handy just to keep an eye on, because domain authority is a comparison metric. So it can go up or down depending on what other blogs or other websites in the same sector are doing in terms of link building. So it could be that you may be 24 one day and you might drop down the next week, and then you might pop up 3 months later to be 27 or something like that. But yeah, it's quite interesting. Just that if you don't know anything about domain authority, it's a metric that was launched by a company called Moz, who have many, many different SEO tools who are great. SEO companies and brands and agencies all focus on this metric. They report on it every month. They focus on improving it for brands. So, you know, from an SEO brand and business side of things, it's very, very important. But from a blogger side, I think it's less important.
Yeah, I would agree. I think people just get a bit hung up on it. And I remember when I was working more on the agency side, people requesting that they want 5 bloggers or whatever, and they have to have a minimum DA of 50. I mean, yeah, you could have somebody who's, yeah, I don't know, someone with really crappy content that has a domain authority of 50. So
yeah, but you know, at the same time, we then got to look at it from a blogger point of view. And if you are a full-time blogger and you're looking at different revenue streams, and a brand come along and they say, look, you know, we're going to pay you £100 for a follow link, there's minimal work involved, and why wouldn't the blogger say yes if it, you know, if it doesn't really, if they don't think it's going to have as much of a negative effect on the blog as they think it would do. So it's both sides. You can see it from both sides.
That was very balanced and fair.
I try to be.
Right, let's get on to some of these questions. So
yes,
I really, really definitely want to talk about Vicky's question, but first, so Louisa, who is online personal stylist, she has asked, how can we up our SEO game in competitive industries such as fashion, where there is a lot of competition for the same keywords? This is a good question.
It's a great question. And in fact, it's a question I've been asked every year of my digital marketing career, I think. And I think a good way of punching above your weight with the big boys is to find a little niche within the sector you're going after. So as an example, we used to work with a jewelry company, and the jewelry company said, look, we want to be the best for wedding rings, engagement rings, and so on and so forth. And we were like, look, that's simply not going to happen overnight, because A, you're new, you're a startup. The authority that your domain has is nothing compared to the likes of, you know, H. Samuel and Ernest Jones and those guys. And they were like, okay, what can we do? And I said, well, let's find a niche. And bizarrely enough, what they went after was festival and sort of fashion and that kind of sector for jewelry, which wasn't big at the time, but actually it got bigger and bigger. And they carved out a niche for themselves in that area, became known for that, and then got a hell of a lot of credibility from Google's point of view, got credibility in terms of links from other sites, and they gradually built up, and then launched out into things like wedding rings, engagement rings, and actually perform really, really well against them still, and are doing well as a business. So I think the key thing is just to look for a particular niche within the sector, whether it's fashion, maybe go after a type of hat or a type of top or type of dress, type of shoe, etc. Absolutely nail it, and then go out from there and see if that works for you.
That's really good advice. And also, it probably is a lot less scary to think about just pick one niche and just get your authority and get basically earn Google's trust, and then you can carry on writing about everything else within your fashion, if that's what it is. Actually, Louisa, I know that she's got quite, she is quite niche anyway, so that will probably be very comforting for her.
Good. Good luck.
Jody Louise says, tips on replicating SEO success. I've got some posts that have worked well, and then when I've tried to recreate them, they haven't been as successful. Hope that makes sense. So I think I know what she's saying, and I think that would be easy to answer, because for example, I have the posts that rank really, really well for me are itinerary posts, but they're two specific type of itinerary posts. They're 2-week itinerary posts. If I do a week itinerary post, it doesn't work as well, and that's simply because I wrote them with, I did my keyword research, and 2-week itinerary is the thing that came up. So if I replicated that to any type of itinerary post, or even 2-week itinerary in India is one that ranks really well, if I did 2-week itinerary in Sri Lanka, that might, I haven't done my keyword research on that, but say I had, maybe people are looking for 3-week itinerary in Sri Lanka. So maybe that wouldn't replicate. Is that a good explanation?
Yeah.
How it might not work?
Yeah, I'd also say that it depends on the competitiveness of the term that you're actually going after. So, for example, a one-week itinerary for Sri Lanka, for instance, may be more competitive than a two-week itinerary for Sri Lanka, in which case the two-week version would perform better than the 1 week simply because there's less competition on Google.
And actually, you've also kind of nicely brought us to the fact that it's not just about the one metric within keywords, but it's about finding gems of keywords that, yeah, kind of straddle both, and long tail keywords specifically.
Yep.
One of the things that I try and think about is that when you're looking at keywords, even if, because it gives you various, if you haven't done keyword research, then you just need to buy my course because I will show you how to do it. But when you do your keyword research, you'll basically get a kind of ugly looking Excel sheet that will tell you how a load of search terms around the ones that you've put in, your seed words, and then kind of ranges. So this has been searched for 0 to 100 times, or and its various increments. You could go for the ones that are being searched for up to 100,000 times a month, but if you get a keyword that 1,000 people a month are searching for and nobody else is writing about it, that's 1,000 people a month to one post.
Yep.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I try and think about, and that's what I tell other people to think about.
Yeah. I've also got a really, 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 really good tip that's worth listening to this podcast alone for. I don't know if it's in your course, but I'm betting it isn't. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you do your keyword research, obviously it will spit out phrases that you should go for based on search volumes and so on and so forth. And then when you actually start writing the post and you sprinkle those keywords within a post, there's also a Google part of the algorithm which looks at supporting keywords as well. Now, the way to find those supporting keywords, and let me give an example. Everyone can go and Google this right now. If you go into Google, are you on Google? Should we try it?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you go into Google and type, let's say we want to find out the supporting keyword or synonym for the word itinerary. So if you go into Google and type itinerary.
Yeah. Done it.
And then leave a space and then put minus, as in the dash itinerary. No space between the dash and itinerary the second time. What that'll bring up in the search results is a load of different words which are in bold and so on and so forth, which are synonyms of the word itinerary. So you probably will see things like itineraries.
Yeah.
And various different bits. So when you construct your post, the strength of the content is based not just on the key phrase that you're going after, but also on the synonyms that you use within the post at the same time.
Clever. That is an excellent tip, and it definitely isn't in my course. So maybe you can write a lesson in the course.
Okay.
For the relaunch.
Happy to.
And then you can have an affiliate link.
Yeah.
Boom, done. Well,
you just put a link to this podcast in the course. There you go.
Perfect. That's a really good tip.
And that
kind of speaks to the fact that Google is wanting you to write for humans.
Correct. Because it's not just about one phrase. It could be that, again, use the same example, but 1 week itinerary Sri Lanka, it could be that people are actually searching for various different types of itineraries, in which case you need to include that content in your post too.
Excellent tip. Okay, so boom, two tips down. Let's just move this out of the way. Laura has asked, if you don't have a lot of time on your hands to make the post super SEO compliant, what would be the one or two most important things to get done? I feel like there are so many things and I never quite know where to start. And I completely relate to that because it sometimes feels really overwhelming of all the things. Oh, I know I should be doing this. I should be doing that. I should be doing this.
Yeah, good question. I think if you're writing on the go, then obviously you might write, let's say you're taking a plane somewhere, you might open up your laptop and write it all in Word or write it in Notepad or, you know, whatever you want. And then you'll load it onto your blog when you have time. So when you do that, I would say the key things behind that are make sure that, whoever stumbles, again, this is from an SEO point of view, but whenever someone stumbles across it on Google, they see a good call to action in the meta description, and the title represents exactly what the post is about. Mm-hmm. Now that might sound, you know, fairly straightforward, but obviously if it's missed out, Google might pick up something on the page that doesn't really have any call to action. So people might click on another link on Google other than your own. So if you are going to spend a little bit of time, get the content right, both on the page, but also in the meta and title tags.
So let's just break that down. So the meta description is when you Google, when you literally type something into Google and your, mm-hmm. and your post comes up first, say, or whatever, the meta description is going to be what the kind of description of what the post is just underneath. Some people,
exactly,
don't,
yeah.
Some people don't write anything, in which case normally I think with WordPress it just takes the first couple of lines from just a standard first couple of lines from your blog post, which I don't know if that's a theme dependent thing, but I'm pretty sure I think it just takes it, which in which case it might be, you know, just something that is really not indicative of what the post is about. So when you're saying make sure that it's basically jazz it up so that people want to click on it.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's more often than not, Google will take that if it's relevant to the content on the page. Often, even if you have a meta description, they might take another bit of content from the post if the query is not quite aligned with the meta description. That's you know, not your issue. It's just what Google does. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just quite handy because then you've got a call to action. Your click through rate is pretty good, probably in Google's eyes. So that's always a plus point.
And actually, no, it's the alt text that pulls through to Pinterest. I was just thinking about on Pinterest, when you pin an image from your blog, what pulls through, and it's actually the alt text, not the, which is kind of annoying, but it doesn't matter. Anyway.
That's a good point, actually. Sorry, actually, yeah. So if you do, it's just best practice, I guess, but if you do use a meta description, more often than not, it's Facebook will take that as the description that it pulls into its open graph onto Facebook as well.
Does it still do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I think so.
Now, let's get on to Vicky's question.
Yay.
Which is a really good one. It's juicy.
It is, yeah.
I don't know if this will be a common problem. But it might be. Do you want to take it away?
Yes, let's do it. So Vicky was saying that she has a website, which I think is separate to her blog. And it just sort of, yeah, exactly. Separate to her blog, just sort of ticks over and it makes a little bit of revenue, but not too much. So she sort of took her eye off the ball and she found out that the hosting company had actually taken it offline. I think it was for 3 months, I think she said. And she noticed it because the revenue stopped coming in from, I assume it just must be affiliate links or whatever that she's using on there. And she was like, oh, my rankings have gone for it and the revenue stopped coming in, the traffic stopped coming in. Is this a bad thing or will my traffic and revenue return? I think that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And her ranking. She was wondering about her
ranking. And her ranking.
Well.
Yeah. So I guess from in the short term, if your site or blog goes offline for, let's say, 24 hours and it's back online, Google appreciates that some sort of blip. It might not necessarily be your fault. I've got to be careful what I say here because you might tell me off. But if it's a little blip, then more often than not, in the short term, it won't impact you at all. But the aim of Google is, of course, to present the most relevant results to its audience. So if someone's typing something, they don't want to serve a result from a site that doesn't exist because people will just bounce back and it's a bad user experience. So it will have a detrimental effect on your traffic rankings, and that's probably why they just threw you out of the index for a little while, or it seemed they did. So the key thing is to get it back online as quickly as possible. And what I recommended to Vicky was to keep an eye on Webmaster Tools, because it shows you things like server connections, DNS, make sure everything is, from a technical point of view, is correct and working okay. And then from there, hopefully you'll be able to see Google sort of re-indexing everything and impressions and clicks going back up over a period of time. That said, because it's been offline for so long, it might take a long time for Google to then build up trust in that domain again. So how long is that? I don't know. That's like saying how long is a piece of string. Mm-hmm. But eventually they'll keep reindexing and say, actually, okay, this site is okay now. It's fine, but they might not place you as high as you once were because of the blip.
Yes. So that's a very niche issue. Just try not to let your site go offline. And what Simon told Vicky on Twitter is that, I mean, I think maybe she just wasn't checking the email address, because whenever my site has gone offline, I get emails like hourly. And Webmaster Tools, which is now called Google Search Console, is a really good thing to track for. It can be a bit overwhelming, but really it will tell you, if suddenly there's no traffic to your site or something, or if there's something, it will tell you if the if any of your pages are being blocking in when it crawls your site, when the robot crawls your site, so you can see if there's lots of redirect issues, if there are URLs that it can't access, it's really good.
Yeah, it's good for two things, really, my point of view. One is diagnostics, so any sort of technical issues with the site, but two, because you don't get a lot of keyword or key phrase data within Google Analytics, it's quite handy for looking at, you know, what phrases people are clicking through to your blog from, which is handy.
Check that on there instead of Google Analytics.
Yeah, so a few years ago, Google changed it. So if you go into Analytics and you go into like acquisition channels, organic search, more often than not, you'll see a little bracket which says not set, and the majority of traffic will come through that. That's just a privacy thing that Google set a few years ago. But within Webmaster Tools, you can see all the keywords, which is quite handy.
See, I didn't even know that. Did I know that? There
you go. You must. You maybe. You're an SEO geek. You probably did.
I am a very much do what I say, not as I do. The amount of stuff that on my site that I don't do is incredible. I do not use it as a portfolio for good SEO best practice. But hey.
I have no comment about that. I'm not going to say a word.
So I just to wrap things up, is there any other tips that you would, any burning SEO tips that you really want to get off your chest to, or things that you see bloggers doing that really irritate you, or you don't have to name names, or you can use me as an example.
Is this SEO related? No. Okay. I would say consider the way people search is not necessarily all about the main rankings you get in terms of the main search results. For example, a URL from your blog, it may be the case that people are doing a lot of image searching. So, for example, make sure your images are optimized. And that's simply a case of, you know, we've all been there in that you're planning on doing a blog post. Let's say you've just had a 48-hour trip to Bruges, which I have actually, which I need to write a blog post for next. And you have about 20, 30 images or something like that. It's very tempting to just pull them off the camera and load them straight into your blog without changing the file name or without reducing the size of them, because it's time consuming. It is time consuming. But it pays dividends. So if rename the file name of each of the images to whatever the image is and wherever the location is, make sure that there is an alt attribute with the image. I don't know if I've gone too techie here, but essentially an alt attribute is just there for accessibility purposes. So for example, if the images don't work on your site, all of a sudden what will show up is a little bit of text which shows what the image is. And that is also quite handy for SEO purposes too. So alt attribute, the title of the file name and
make sure it's not too big.
Exactly. Correct.
I do, so I know not everyone will be able to do this, but in Lightroom, I find it so much easier to do this because the set that you export will all have a file name and you can, you don't have to rename everything individually. You can rename it each one. It does it for you basically with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on at the end. So then you get like a nice neat file name that isn't IMG dash blah, 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 meaningless.
Yeah.
So that's quite a good tip. So perfect. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. Where can everybody find you online?
Thank you for having me here. Well, they can find me on my blog, which is adventurebagging.co.uk. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as at Mr. Hayes, Mr. H-E-Y-E-S, and on Facebook too, by the same name, Adventure Bagging.
And you can find me at Lucy Lucraft everywhere, but I mostly hang out on Instagram. You can find old episodes of What She Said over at lucylucraft.com, where you'll also find me chatting about all things blogging, vegan travel, and zero waste living too. Lastly, I know everybody asks this and it's a total pain in the ass, but please think about leaving the show a review. It makes a huge difference in getting the show out to new listeners. And for each review you leave, I donate £2 to charity. So that's £1 for you and £1 from me. The chosen charity changes each month, so listen out for it in the intro each week. Thanks for listening, if indeed you still are.
What do you mean? Do I have to like get some SEO analogies in that relate to sex?
Yeah, I'd like that. If you could, that would be great. Nobody else has managed to do it. So.
Insert the link. Let's not do that. It sounds a bit weird.
Insert that long tail keyword.
That's it. That's the one.
Boom. All right. Full silent, for I shall start.